Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Welcome back in, everybody, for another hour of Sports Daily. I want to say thanks to Crestview Country Club for their support of the program. Give Crestview a call. This is the time to talk to them about memberships. Maybe you can negotiate some things in there, but there are social memberships that don't even have golf included in them, and those are still active and alive. Great restaurant, great bar, golf simulators, great tennis facilities, soon to be great pool, all kinds of stuff you might be interested in. Give them a call. Tommy and I are both out there. We both love it. We'd see you out there. Give them a call. Ask them about all the different things they have. And tell them we sent you. We appreciate their support. All right. We come back into hour number two, fellas. We have Dan Israel coming up in about 15 minutes from now to chat about Chiefs-Texans, chat about that rust, that delay. Can't wait to get to that conversation. But let's look elsewhere, though, real quick at the other three games. Commanders-Lions, you've got a 9.5-point line there. Rams-Eagles, you got a 6-point line there. And Ravens Bills, the Bills are actually home underdogs in that game.
I think we lost Jacob there, TJ. we'll try to get him back. Yeah, so taking a look at those lines, are you surprised about the fact that the Ravens are favorites on the road against the Bills?
Yeah, it's going to be a great game. I know that it will be. I don't know who I even like in this game. Obviously, I think that we've seen the Ravens, the kryptonite a little bit. They've lost some kind of stupid games, for lack of a better term. And I think that the Bills may be a bit more of a disciplined team, so I'm kind of surprised that they aren't getting the favor that way. But I don't know who I am to bet against Lamar Jackson in the playoffs, to bet against Derrick Henry in the playoffs, because they're playing as well as probably any team in the entire league right now. So I think I saw yesterday that whenever the ESPN game matchup predictor or whatever came out, it was an even 50-50 split, which is awesome. I think this is going to be the game of the playoffs, and it's going to be something dramatic like we always see. I think this is the one that we'll see it in.
This is the round. Sorry, I don't know what happened there. This is the round we always love the most. It's always usually the round that delivers the greatest deal. I don't remember, and I'd have to go back historically and look at what the lines are. And I don't remember one where we've seen basically three of the lines be a touchdown or more. I think that is pretty interesting when you look at it in totality. But I do think this round will deliver. I don't think there is any road team that can't win. I think the Texans are the least likely to do it. Vegas thinks the Commanders are the least likely to do it. But, man, Ravens, Bills. So here's what I want to ask you guys, because I've had this discussion when I go on the Infinity Sports Network and do some other things, and people are fired up about it. So Josh Allen's probably going to win the MVP this year, and Lamar Jackson has had a far better season, quite frankly. Now, there are a lot of reasons for that, right? Allen is getting the credit for losing a lot of his weapons and having the season that he's having. He's been pulled from a lot of games because their defense has been much better. I think most of that is nonsense. I think the MVP conversation, Tommy, like our criteria for it changes every single year. And I here's my take on it. I think Josh Allen will win it because he didn't get it last year. And the league or the voters or the writers think he deserves one. But his season this year isn't even as good as his season last year. And Lamar's is maybe one of the best, if not the best, we've ever seen. But Allen's going to win it basically because he didn't win it last year.
But don't you think that the winner of the game this weekend, the quarterback, will
win
the
MVP? They waited.
Like that's kind
well,
of.
They don't, but it's already done. I think I don't. They don't. We don't see playoff games.
I guess I thought that there was still voting that could still take place and all of that. It'll be interesting if Allen gets that and the Bills lose the game to Lamar, right? Like that will because I think that you can make really strong arguments for either one of those guys. But if whichever one is sitting at home after the divisional round, I mean, that's going to dull that argument that one quarterback should be the MVP.
Yeah, it's the voting is done.
Okay,
which is nonsense that we vote for these things before the season is played out. Because yes, that would make it simple. If one of these two flames out in the playoffs, the other should just be the MVP. There were a lot of MVP candidates this year, by the way. Saquon needed to be an MVP candidate. Jared Goff probably did. Sam Darnold to a lesser degree. Joe Burrow had an unbelievable statistical season. Guys, Ja'Marr Chase had a triple crown and was threatening like top five all-time numbers in yards and touchdowns. Didn't get there, but got real close. Like there were a lot of MVP candidates this year, and it just Josh Allen just sort of got written into it. And I'm like, why this year did Josh Allen get written into that? And it surprised me. But I'm telling you, it's because he didn't win it last year. And the league feels like he probably should have. And so he's going to win it this year when he deserves it probably less than he did a year ago.
Yeah, it's such a stupid way of looking at it, but it's completely right. I mean, that's what they're going to do. You know, they talk about the voter fatigue and everything like that for the MVP voters. And it sucks because, you know, you said Lamar had his best season of his career. And you're, you know, obviously you think Josh Allen deserves one. Well, Lamar Jackson deserves three of them. You know, it doesn't matter that he's won one before. You know, it sucks because we're going to look back in 50 years and be comparing quarterbacks, and well, Lamar only won this many MVPs, and it's like, well, he should have had this one, and they gave it to Josh Allen because they felt bad because he deserved one, and Lamar is better in every statistical category. It's the same argument that we saw in the NBA 5 years ago, whenever that was now, whenever Steph Curry won another one of these, and LeBron said, he's like, well, if you think about the most valuable player, you know, look at my team and what I have. And it's like, well, if you're going to call it that, then it's just the LeBron award because LeBron always was on crappy teams. It's the best player is who the MVP is. There needs to be a definition somewhere that this is the best player in the NFL.
You should at least wait until the most important games are played. If it's really the most valuable player, Tommy, then Mahomes should just get it every year.
That's the same
like
argument.
If you want to talk about adversity within a season and what Mahomes has done to have only one loss, and I know some of them were lucky, but when your line is as bad as it is, when you don't have any of your top three receivers for a large majority of the season, and you're sitting here, you know, watching the wild card round, like there are the problem with the NFL MVP award is it's never defined the same way within a season.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers won a couple of them. The second one he won most recently, like Tom Brady absolutely should have won that award that year. He was better statistically. They had a better season. Like it wasn't even a thing. Lamar Jackson's got two. I don't think there are people afraid to put Lamar in that category, which I believe only include Peyton, Tom Brady, and Aaron Rodgers as three-time or more winners of that award. Brett Favre had three, I think. I don't think it's that. I think it's honestly because there are people that are like, well, we give it to Lamar, and then he struggles in the postseason, so we don't want to give it to him again because that might happen again. Give it after the season. Like that's the easy solution. Give the award after the season. The most meaningful games get played now, not before voting's ever done.
I mean, it's been an argument in every sport that gives out an MVP almost every single year about what does that mean? What does MVP mean? When you could really just simplify it as the best player. Who is the best player this year?
Or in the NFL, the best quarterback.
Best quarterback.
How would you ever compare? How would you ever legitimately? Pick if Saquon set the all-time rushing record, right? Okay, let's say he does that. you can't, like, you can't tell me he's more valuable to his team than any of these quarterbacks, because he's not. Like, his replacement value is much easier to attain than the quarterback. So you have to gum it up a little bit. I'm not saying Saquon shouldn't have won or anything like that. I'm saying, like, it's, you can't define it anyway. So at least just wait. If Saquon went ham in the postseason and led the Eagles to a Super Bowl, then he probably should have been the MVP, right? But he's not going to get that chance.
You mentioned the Bengals. I mean, both Burrow and Chase, you know, were quote unquote MVP candidates, most valuable player candidates. Their team missed the playoffs with both of them on the field.
And that has
right?
to be held against them in For the sure. final voting. So, and it could be.
But, you know, but that doesn't mean that they're not among the best players in right. the NFL, because they clearly are. But as far as a value is concerned, they missed the playoffs. They lost a bunch of games early on in the season with both of them. Like, that's a component of it for sure. It becomes this arbitrary argument year in and year out about how we value it, what that means, how it all works. And you're never going to have complete consensus on all of that.
No, and that's the part of the fun too, TJ. I mean, that's by design. Like, it gets us talking. I did 5 hours the other day and couldn't get to another topic because it was just the lowest hanging fruit of all time. We love it. Like, we love to talk about it, and that's a part of it. I get it.
Yeah. The thing that I hate the most that the NFL does is they name an MVP. So the MVP is probably going to be Josh Allen, but the offensive player of the year, that's going to be Saquon Barkley. Even though Josh Allen plays on offense, they're going to give that one to Saquon because he deserves an award. So let's give him that one. Such a stupid way that everything's handled. And you said you can't really compare a running back and a quarterback, but I think that the only way that you can compare this is, and what they do in other sports as well, is just how does that stack up against historic MVPs? How does Saquon's season stack up to another running back MVP season, whenever the last one even was? I can't even remember. You know, you just have to look. Is that season better than that season? Was it worse than that season? Was Lamar's MVP season better than his MVP season last season? It was. I think Lamar should win it. Not to just rant on my soapbox here, but that's the way it should be
Lamar
handled.
Should win it. Lamar just had one of the best seasons we've ever seen, if not the best season we've ever seen from a quarterback. I mean, like, it's absolutely absurd what he did in the regular season. And it is a regular season award. Can he do it against the Bills? We'll have much more on that game throughout the week. Boy, you want to talk about two quarterbacks who are all-timers, right? Like, you put them in any generation, they're going to be right there with any quarterback they're playing with, that have, like, everything to lose in that game or gain, you know, depending on what kind of run they can make. Man, what a awesome game that's going to be. We're going to talk about the Chiefs game with Dan Israel when we return. That's a good one, too. Don't go away. Sports Daily coming right back.
The commercials are over.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH. And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
Executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network, Dan Israel, on the program with us. Dan, thanks for shifting up to the earlier time slot with us here on Sports Daily.
Yeah, absolutely. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. We're glad to be coming at people a little earlier here and still giving people in the old time slot exactly what they've always expected. The Chiefs, look. Right out of the gates, the question on everybody's mind is, when you don't play for as long as they've played meaningful snaps, how much rust do you worry about? We saw in the college football playoff this be a concern, but this is obviously a much more experienced team that's been there before. How is the rust factoring in for you, Dan?
You know, every player that you talk to, Jacob, would insist the rest is more important. Collectively, that produces rust. And I think that's the debate. You know, I think even in the last time in 2019, when they played the Texans in the wild card round, they came out and they spent a quarter trying to figure out how to get going, right? Yeah. Now, eventually they did, and they ended up thumping the Texans. But I think it's an issue. I think the one thing they have going for them now versus 2019 is the experience. They may be the most experienced team in the playoffs NFC and AFC. So with that, I think comes the knowledge that the game's going to be fast. It's going to start fast. It's going to stay fast, and it's going to be physical. And if you don't come out and play that way, you'll find yourself in a hole you can't dig out of.
Dan, I know that we talked about a lot of people talked about who the Chiefs could see in this divisional round. It could have ended up being
you know,
divisional
opponents.
I think I'm unmuted.
There we go. We got it.
Could end up being divisional opponents.
Oh, just play him, so. Yeah,
sorry.
Hang on, TJ. All right, TJ. Hang on just a second, buddy. Unmute yourself, TJ. Sorry. There we go. Yeah, we got you.
Okay, something's going on here on my end. Sorry.
In this divisional round, they could end up seeing an AFC West opponent. A lot of people probably prefer the Texans, seeing that just happened
against them, and they won that game. But after seeing what the Texans did this last week, it feels like a completely different team that we saw at Arrowhead on December 21st.
That second half team against the Chargers was formidable. I'll tell you, I think they're more healthy than when they played a few weeks ago in Arrowhead. And they were tough then. You know, I mean, Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter, man, that's all you have to say. Who's going to play our offensive line? Because they're going up against two good ones in those defensive ends. And so that really is going to be one of the key aspects, I think, of this game. I'm not sure we've seen enough out of Humphreys to really say he's ready. And so I think we go with the proven Tooney slide or whatever we want to call this and take that route, at least in game one of the playoffs. And then maybe depending on where you are in the second half, if you've got a big lead, maybe we try to get some guys in there with experience, but I'm just not sure I've seen enough out of him to go up against Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter.
Well, I mean, because you don't want to use both, do you, Dan? Like, you don't want to mix them. You kind of want to just make your call and commit to it to some degree because you got to practice that way, especially when you haven't played the meaningful snaps in a while.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think that would be a creative way of, you know, putting guys in and out, and you're always changing personnel, but that's hard on the offense as well. You know, Mahomes needs to be able to count on what he's getting there, and I think the only way to do that is to play these guys, you know, snap after snap. Now, again, if the third quarter or the fourth quarter gets here and you've got a sizable lead, you want to do some experimenting, that might be a good time to pull Mahomes out as well. That would be a wonderful thing, but you don't see that very often in playoff games.
I don't even know where we stand on the Isaiah Pacheco injury, the final week there. But even when he was healthy, it seemed like the Chiefs were putting Kareem Hunt out there more. Now that they've had this large amount of rest, who do you expect to see the majority of snaps at running back?
Yeah, TJ, I kind of feel the same way. I feel like, you know, Hunt was really running strong and he was kind of earning that role. And I think if you had a season of wear with no rest on Hunt, they might be more hesitant to put the load on his back. They might want to go with the fresher back, but he's had a couple of weeks off. These guys are going to have 23 days off between, you know, the debacle in Denver and now, or I guess going back to the game before that. So I feel like they're going to rely on Kareem, but you know, coaches creative with that. And I do think that's a situation where, you know, if one guy doesn't develop a hot hand really quickly, you see some substitution, right? And see if the other guy can.
I think they both have their, you know, Hunt's been good, but he doesn't have the explosive ability of Isaiah Pacheco. But that'll be a fascinating one. Here's one I've got for you, Dan. I think the player to watch, I think the player that is the most likely to go off to some degree in the postseason is Travis Kelce. Mm-hmm. They finally have their wide receivers out there collectively. Travis Kelce's, at least in my brain, never had in the last 4 or 5 years a better opportunity to get one-on-one than he'll have right now, because if they double him, what are you going to do with Worthy and Hollywood Brown and DeAndre Hopkins? Like, you can't do it. And if you can't do it, and they're now doing this quick strike offense, it feels to me like Kelce could be looking at 9-10 catches a game here because he's going to get that one-on-one coverage, and we know what he does to that historically.
And I feel like he's been kind of, I don't want to say he's been saving it all season, because That's probably not. Yes, that's not fair. But it feels like it, doesn't it? It feels like a balloon that's been blown up game after game after game, and now we're just going to let it go, and it's going to go nuts. And he lives for the playoffs, man. You know, he and Mahomes are just, they understand this so well, and I feel like, you know, he was content with the 900 yards or whatever he finished, 843 yards that he finished the season with, because he knows that the goal is to three-peat. And all that matters is how he plays in the postseason. So I kind of feel like he's going to be pumped and primed and ready to just come out and destroy teams. And as you said, he's got the supporting cast to do it now.
Then you alluded,
obviously like a month of rest for this team. It's going to be the most healthy that we've seen this collective group on the field at one time because as soon as one guy came back, one guy went down. How big of a deal is that to have this unit out there? It feels like you have to be optimistic about it.
I think it's been the story all year. I think it's been this buried headline. If you ask me, and I know everybody wants Kevin O'Connell to get Coach of the Year, but after the collapse of the last couple of weeks, I'm not sure that's warranted. Andy Reid has been fighting this thing since week one, really since training camp. And it feels like he's just overcome. Now, I get it. They expect Andy Reid to do that. And so it doesn't look flashy when he does, but I really feel like the headline all season has been, how did the Chiefs go 15-2 with all those injuries? And now they get these guys back, or a lot of these guys back. I mean, I wouldn't know what to do if we got Rice back at this point. It's almost an embarrassment of riches. But it'll be really good to see Hollywood Brown out there, a guy that can go toe-to-toe with Xavier Worthy and really threaten in the top of the defense. And then you've got guys all over the place to across the middle, all the way from Travis Kelce to DeAndre Hopkins to Juju Smith-Schuster. I mean, I feel like they are poised. If Mahomes has one of those playoff accuracy games that he's so famous for, man, look out. I don't know how the Texans will fight back through that.
Well, because they now have the ability to neutralize the pass rush. With those particular receivers, they can get it out quickly. Jalen Watson, are we expecting Jalen Watson to play? Speaking of guys getting healthy, is that a real possibility?
I have not heard. I know he was on the path, but they were they were being very cautious with him. So I don't know. I'll find out for you.
You know, everybody talks about path whenever you get into these playoffs.
It's certainly something. Like, their defense was much better with him than they were without him, I think.
Yeah, despite his youth. He was a factor in that. And I felt like when he went out early in the season, it was a marked difference. And, you know, look, the defense, is it as good as it was last year? Probably not, but it's good. And the offense is better. So, you know, I mean, can these guys go out and compete? I do think so. I think you're going to have a healthy Chris Jones going up against, you know, a kind of a beat up offensive line for the Texans. And so I think that all bodes well for getting pressure on CJ Stroud. And Stroud's one of those quarterbacks, man. I mean, we watched it with Jalen Daniels, man. Was that something, watching that kid? He reminds me so much of Mahomes. He's just got a will to win. And I think CJ Stroud is kind of built from that same fabric. And so the last thing you want to do is let him kind of catch fire and feel like, give him some confidence that he's doing the right things here. You want to put him under pressure from the moment the first whistle's blown. And so I feel like if the offensive line can get that pressure on, it minimizes what we have to do with the secondary. I mean, right, that's the way it works. And the one thing you can't do is give a guy 6, 8, 10 seconds to throw. No secondary is going to survive that. So I really feel like the pressure, no pun intended, is on the offensive or the defensive line to really get to CJ Stroud, or at least move him off the mark.
Dan, I apologize.
My mic's on the fritz over here. Everybody talks about the path to the playoffs and everything like that. We saw the Chiefs go on the road and do it this year, but looking at the rest of the AFC, how nice is it to have this go through Arrowhead and a potential AFC championship this game as well?
Yeah, it's completely different feel. You know, I mean, the fact that the Bills and the Ravens, one of those isn't going to survive the other, is just, that's a glorious thing, because last year we were looking at that going, wow, this is a heavy lift. You know, I mean, if you want to get to the Super Bowl this year, you are going to have to earn it. And they did. And kudos to them, because they didn't play well all regular season, but they played well when it counted. And they're going to need to do the same thing, because I don't think the Texans are going to be an easy team. And certainly whoever makes it out of the 3-4 seed, or the 2-3, whatever that is, seed with the Ravens and the Bills, neither one of those teams is going to be easy, right? I mean, I feel like both those teams are really good and playing well right now. I kind of feel like the Ravens will defeat the Bills. That's just my gut feel. I'm not sure who I want to come to Arrowhead. I'm just glad they're coming to Arrowhead. Like, as you said, I'm just glad they're coming here.
Yeah, it's probably going to be just brutally cold if the Chiefs get by the Texans, but let's not get ahead of ourselves. What would be the thing, Dan, that could doom the Chiefs on Sunday? Is it rust, or is it something, you know, schematically or strategically that could be a potential downfall for the Chiefs in the divisional round?
I don't think it would be strategic or schematic. I think it would be just execution. You know, the rust of execution, a fumble here, a turnover there. I mean, in the playoffs, I know the giveaway turnaway ratio is taking kind of a beating this year, and a little bit last year, where that used to tell you everything you needed to know about a game. And that's not necessarily true anymore. But I do think as you get into playoff football, defenses are better, and one possession or two possessions is a big deal, or can be a big deal. And so, yeah, I think it's just more the rust on execution. Can they come out? Can Mahomes connect with his receivers? A lot of mouths to feed, but is he got that kind of pinpoint accuracy that he was so famous for when he was young? And you know, I feel like if they can come out and play, execute in a solid fashion, I think the game plan will be good.
Dan, we appreciate it.
Yeah, man.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps.
Beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring amazing special guests from the cast and crew.
After that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Good luck on the call. We'll have it here on you know, the Chiefs Radio Network. Anything special you guys have coming up in an early Saturday broadcast?
It was funny. We were in pre-production a little bit earlier this week, and we were talking, and I said, so what do you want to do guest-wise? Do you want to get a guest in there? And the room was kind of silent, and Danan looked at Kling, and Kling looked at Danan, and like, we got a lot to talk about. I was like, okay, guys. It's the playoffs.
It's been a while.
I'll give you that.
It's been since Christmas that you've been able to talk about.
That's right. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Good luck on the call, Dan. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Go Chiefs.
There goes Dan Israel, executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network. Always good stuff there with Dan. I'm having a hard time. And Tommy, I really like the Chiefs in this game. I think that it's tricky because they're coming in, and I don't think we've seen this yet this year. Like, we have not seen them fully healthy like this at all this year. So what can that open up offensively? I think we'll be closer to what we thought this offense could be when we started this year, even though I know they still don't have Rashee Rice, but this is closer than it's been all year to what we thought we were going to get out of the offense. You've got Isaiah Pacheco there, and now you have, because if you swap what we thought we were getting out of Rice and insert DeAndre Hopkins, I think you can do that somewhat fairly. Like, now this is Patrick Mahomes with the most he can cook with.
I think it's just going to come down to how they execute that. I mean, on paper, they've got the most complete offense that we've seen all season long, ready to roll for the playoffs, minus Rashee Rice. I mean, everybody from Xavier Worthy, you know, stepping up and taking that step forward, to Hollywood Brown, healthy and back in the lineup, Hopkins, Pacheco, Hunt, Kelsey. I mean, they've got their guys. They've got their playmakers. It's just going to be a matter of how they utilize them and how they execute it.
Yeah, TJ, and then there's the other side of the ball. And I think that's where the Chargers doom themselves because they turn the ball over. You know, the Chiefs haven't been doing that for a while. And so the defense, we always want to look at the Chiefs defense, but, you know, it's also starting to pick it up finally, sort of back to where we saw it at the beginning of the year. Chris Jones might be healthy. I'm having a hard time. I mean, I love the Chiefs in this game. I'm having a hard time finding something for Houston to hang its hat on here.
Yeah, you know, you just think about what the Chiefs have had, and this is the game against the Texans that I think that we were anticipating back on December 21st, and that game was really, I think it was wire to wire, the Chiefs won that game, I believe, and a lot of people talked about the Texans and what they were going to be in this AFC, and I think that after that one, everybody's like, well, I mean, it's the Texans. They kind of just got embarrassed on Christmas. You know, they kind of just lost to the Chiefs in Arrowhead, and they're kind of limped into the playoffs. But I think that what they did last week, you know, Nico Collins went for a buck 22, and Joe Mixon went for 100 yards, and what the pass rush has, and, you know, Mahomes probably going to have to stay in the pocket a little bit against that pass rush or whatever he's going to have to do because they have a really great one. You just heard Dan talk about it. So I think the Texans have a lot more to hang their hat on than what you're giving them credit for, in my opinion. But I do think that the Chiefs can win this game, but it's going to be a tough road to get there. I can't believe that the spread is as big as it is, honestly.
Well, I mean, it's as big as the margin was last time they played, Tommy, but like the Texans would hang their hat on their pass rush. There's no question about that, but the Chiefs haven't been giving teams the opportunity lately to get there because the ball is gone quickly. Like they're done with the downfield shots. Like those are done. Everything is quick now.
Well, we'd been wondering for so long how the Chiefs could mitigate the disaster on the offensive line, at least at left tackle, all season long. And it really hasn't been left tackle play getting any better. I know Joe Tooney is doing everything he possibly can do to try to improve it. He can only do so much. It hasn't really been improved play at left tackle. It's been how they run their offense to sort of get away from that and minimize, you know, Patrick Mahomes holding onto the ball and trying to take deep shots and things like that. Whether or not, you know, we're talking about them leaning on the run game with Pacheco and Hunt, or getting the ball out quickly with, you know, quick strikes to guys like Hopkins and Worthy, that's really going to have to be the way that the Chiefs continue to operate. I think they can have a lot of success with that. They've just got to really commit to that.
We'll have much, much more on this game this week. It's finally that time of the year. Cannot wait for it. Your comments on the Chiefs game open now. We're back opened up on the KFH hotline, on our video streams. We're coming right back with more Sports Daily right after this.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. It is a Tuesday, and we are glad to be here with you. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster, TJ Cleland. If you missed anything with the executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network, Dan Israel, you can go back and listen on the Odyssey app. That's always available for you there. You can get tuned up for the Chiefs right here tonight. Speaking of, the Chiefs Kingdom Show will be on, and you can catch that on the Odyssey app or right here on KFH. It starts at 6, and then, of course, we have K-State Wildcat basketball tonight that follows it at 7 o'clock. Shocker basketball over on KEYN. Pregame coverage there begins at 5:30. As we spent some time there in some past segments on the Shockers, the state of things. Boy, it just really like to see them get a win, get some wins. I think, again, and we can revisit it for just a second here. I think the path for them to get to where we ultimately thought they could be is, although seemingly not realistic now, more realistic than K-State getting to the point we thought they could be at the start of the year, which is to be in the top half of the Big 12, which right now, fellas, I got to tell you, like, I don't know who K-State's going to beat in the Big 12. Like, maybe they can shoot lights out from three in a game or two and get some wins here. But based on what we've seen lately, it feels like they've got no shot to win Big 12 games.
Well, shoot, I thought that, you know, they would be able to handle a team like Oklahoma State. I know that it was in Stillwater, but, you know, it's not like the Cowboys are a premier program right now. And they struggled big time, especially to end the first half last week in Stillwater. So that's a major concern if they can't, you know, hang with a team like Oklahoma State that's kind of in rebuilding mode right now with a new coach and all of that after they moved on from Mike Boynton. So if they can't do that, again, I know it was on the road, I have a hard time thinking that they're going to be able to, you know, have a whole lot of success in general. And the fact that they just got throttled by a Houston team at home. And it just, it shows the disparity between the teams at the very top of the conference and then where K-State is right now.
Well, but TJ, I think when we look at K-State, like the issue that like we still don't even know, like, what's a good version of K-State? Like, what is their, like, for the Shockers, we've seen what they can be. They have quality wins sprinkled all over their schedule. Like, we know what they're capable of. I have no idea what K-State is capable of or what a potential ceiling for them is, because we're 15 games into a season and we haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I had a conversation with somebody the other day about the whole Jerome Tang argument about whether his seat's hot, when his seat does get hot. And I said, for his seat to really get hot, to a conversation to start having, they have to be last place in the Big 12 or second to last place. And I think everything above that, you just kind of have to just swallow and deal with it, which sucks, but I think that's what's going to have to happen. And they said, there's no way that K-State should finish below UCF and Utah and these teams like that. And I said, if they played each other on a neutral court, you're not going to pick K-State in that game, because they haven't shown you any reason to believe that they can beat these Big 12 teams. And frankly, when they beat Cincinnati, it was a surprise. They were favored in that game, but I wouldn't say that any of us were non-surprised that they won that game. You look at the Big 12 up and down, and if you played K-State in a neutral court against any of them, I don't think that you'd pick K-State in any game, especially after they lost to Oklahoma State. I don't know who they're going to beat.
Well, Cincinnati's 0-4 again. I'll remind you to start the league. If you go by the metrics, K-State is the worst. Like, they're the worst net. Like, the metrics don't like them either. They still, their lone quality win is Cincinnati, and we'll see if that's a quality win or not. A home win against Cincinnati, I mean, it's a quality win. That's not going to change. It's a quality win. Any win in the Big 12 is probably a quality win. But man, like, that of your, what do they have, 7 wins now? Like, go look at the other 6. And they're getting boat raced by everybody else. Like, they're just not even barely losing. Like, they're getting smashed. It's wild, wild stuff to think about where they were. And so when we talk about, Tommy, the path to get back, you know, if it's top half of the Big 12, what do we got? 16 teams now. You got to be better than one of, right, UCF, TCU, BYU, Arizona State, Utah, Oklahoma State, Cincinnati, or Colorado as it currently stands. You have to be better than all of them to be in the top half. All of those teams. Like, that to me just doesn't seem possible, because, again, I don't even know what the best version of K-State is still. There may not be one.
I think that you can take the whole conversation about them finishing in the top half of the Big 12 just completely out of it. Like, it's not going to happen. It won't happen. I know that's, you know, where you would hope to see this program at this point, especially with the newcomers that they brought in, because, you know, I feel like what Hassan can do in shooting the three, Coleman Hawkins, you know, can, I know he's paid a lot of money, but he, you know, can continue to be productive, all of that. And then some of the other newcomers, pair him up with David Gasson and the younger guys on that roster. Yeah, the hope is that that's a team that can hit the court and be in the top half of the Big 12. They haven't shown any reason why they can do that. And right. I think that as you're comparing and contrasting where things are at for the Wildcats versus where things are at for the Shockers, TJ brought up a point while we were on break last hour about how with Wichita State, it's almost more maddening because they've shown they can do it. They just haven't lately. Like, they were good and now they're bad. With K-State, they've just been bad. Like, they've just been like flat out bad for basically the entire season.
So here, I'm just looking at the net rankings, and even with the disaster of the last couple of weeks, the Shockers, I believe, still sit 5th right now in the net among American teams. That's how, and I'm only saying that to remind ourselves of what they've done this year.
Is that what we're reminding ourselves of?
Not just that. We know that. But that's part of the reason why I think, like, if the Shockers can play like they played at the beginning of the season, they could still, even with as bad as it's been, if they just return to that, that could be a path to being the fourth best team in the American when the dust settles, which is where we wanted them to be, right? Top three, top four anyway. I'm not saying I think that's going to happen. Nothing that we've seen in the last 2 weeks would make you think, oh yeah, that's going to happen. I'm just saying, like, the path to get there, like, it's not even in the same universe as K-State's path to expectations. So look, I'm an optimist, so I want to, like, get excited about every game that we watch and cover. And that's all I can hang my hat on, is if whatever it is that has gone wrong with the perimeter defense, the turnovers, all of these things the last few weeks, at least we've seen them be better than that. We haven't seen K-State be any better than what they are currently at any point this year. So if they do something special, it will be getting to a place that we don't even know exists yet. If Wichita State can just get back to where we've seen them not that long ago, TJ, their path to where we thought that might be is still sitting there.
Yeah, 2 points on that. You know, looking at the rest of their conference schedule, I was talking to our friend Joe Baker about this, that he was wondering where Wichita State could finish this season. I said, when you look at conference play, they're going to play 18 games. They're 0-3. They've got 15 ahead of them. Five of those games, they're going to play Memphis twice, Florida Atlantic, North Texas are all teams that are by every metric better than them when you look at the predictive rankings. So their ceiling the rest of the way is 10-5, which feels insane to think about right now.
Feels miles away.
But you're going to play Charlotte. You're going to play Tulsa. You're going to play the bottom dwellers of this AAC and have a chance here. The second point is their goals were we talked that this could be the team that could make a run to make it back to March Madness. It's something that we haven't seen in a couple of years. It seems completely far-fetched now. But the fact of the matter is the American is a one-bid league. And
absolutely,
the way the SEC is playing, the way the Big 12 is playing, they're going to take every single spot. So you're not going to get an at-large bid if you're in the American. They have to go win that tournament in March. And the great part about college basketball is that they aren't eliminated yet. They got to go beat every team in that tournament still. They beat Memphis last year, who was worlds better than they were. And the rest of the American's not very good. It's still on the table. There's a lot that needs to be fixed. But basically, you have 2 months to figure it out. And these games, frankly, they don't matter anymore. You're not going to win the American anymore.
Well, I mean, look, if Memphis does something special and continues their path and then loses the conference tournament, that would be the only. Memphis is good enough to be an at-large right now, but that's your only. I mean, that is the path. It's not a two-bid league without an upset Cinderella-type conference tournament run. I'm not trying to be I don't care about Wichita State as it pertains to the NCAA tournament right now. I care about that they finish near the top of the AAC. Because if they can't do that, that is a major, major, major problem. And especially in this season where the league is it's the worst it's been since Wichita State has been in it. This is the worst year for it. And they brought all off season. It's look what we're bringing back. We've got all this experience. Like, they have to be able to climb up the AAC standings.
Yeah, and let's go back to kind of what that ceiling is, TJ, that you sort of lined out there. I mean, let's say that 10-5 the rest of the way is the ceiling, knowing who they're playing. Well, then you finish conference at 10-8 overall. That's 5 wins better than last year in conference play for the Shockers.
I don't know the last time they went 500 in conference play. That's
right.
The thing.
You know, now, should we expect that? I think we can hope for that. That might be the ceiling that you reach for. But knowing the way that they played against UTSA, the way they played against South Florida at home just in the last week, man, it makes it really difficult to even think that 10-5 ceiling with the bottom dwellers in the conference that you're playing, I have a hard time thinking that that's realistic.
Well, it's not realistic, but it's out there, right? And only when you think of it in terms of, like, the best version of the Shockers, even that we've seen this year, right? I'm looking back. So Isaac Brown, they were 11-2 in the league. His second year was the year they struggled the most. His last year, they were 6-9. His second year, they were 9-9.
Yeah,
they were 9-9.
Yeah.
In that year,
yep.
And that was, and we are told that that's not good.
That's not good enough.
Right, and so, like, the expectation is not 10-8. I don't think 10-8 is going to be the record that has the Shockers in the top three or four of this league. So when you look at the schedule now, I don't think you can think of it that way. You have to think of it as they're going to, at some point, beat a team that you're thinking about in, like, they must not lose all four to Memphis, to North Texas, and then you know, Florida Atlantic in that other game. Like, they can't lose all five of those games if they're going to get. And so you look back at it now, and again, if you're trying to be optimistic here with it, remember that they beat teams this year in St. Louis, Minnesota, Northern Iowa, Western Kentucky that either are at right there with those teams or better. So they're capable of it. Now, doesn't feel like that based on the way we've seen them play lately, right? At all. But at other times in this season, they've been good enough to win games like that. So can they get back to that point? Can Ronnie DeGray ride in on his silver horse and save this defense?
I don't know.
Because that's about the only thing I can think of right now. He is maybe their best defender. I will say that. And he defends all five positions. He'll help when he gets back defensively. But can he come in and sort of change this, whatever culture it is that is in, you know,
the lack of effort, the lack of discipline, like all of that. I mean, like I mentioned it yesterday, Ronnie DeGray is not going to come in and magically keep the rest of the team from dribbling the ball off their foot.
Exactly.
Right. But can he be the linchpin to get them? Because we've seen them not do that at points this season. Again, it's not what we're talking about with K-State, where we haven't even seen them be good. Like we have though, with Wichita State, we've seen a lot of games where they don't turn the ball over. That's only a recent problem. We've seen a lot of games where they didn't allow the opposition to shoot 50% from three, which they seem to do now every conference game that they play for some reason. They're going to have to coach their way out of it and get the effort back on the table. That's it. Like, that's all they can do. That game is tonight. You've got K-State tonight. We're hyping ourselves up for it, if you can't tell. Like, we're trying to get the energy back to be excited about these basketball games. We'll be back more Sports Daily right after.